Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the show. Clint Sterner's Football at 4.
We got to not give up 60-yard runs at the end of the game, Aaron. This narrative that's being painted like my guys are undisciplined and running around blocks, quite frankly, and to be put it bluntly, is bullshit. My guys play hard, they battle, they're doing the absolute best they can, and they leave their everything they have on that football field to go out there and stone the run. We lost the game 10-0. Yeah, you could say it's been 17-0. All right, but we expect to go out there and stop the run every time we do it. But to sit here and paint this narrative, there was a question asked to Romeo the other day about the accountability of the defense. Are they accountable? Hell yeah, they're accountable. Anybody that's worked for me, anything I've done in my entire life has been accountable. And if that's ever questioned, then I'll resign, okay? But these guys battle. They fight. They're doing everything they can to go out there and stop the run. And we're going to try to do it again this weekend.
Adam Spillane with Cecil Shorts. Second half of the show, Tyler Milner is producing. That was Anthony Weaver before last week's game against the Patriots. I want to know, Cecil, from you, when you hear your coach, whether it's a head coach or a coordinator, position coach, whatever, when you hear your coach defend you the way that Anthony Weaver did last week, what is that like in that locker room?
Man, you'll run through a wall for that guy. Like, that right there is why the defense played well this past weekend. Like, he standing up for the guys. And we just talked about off air how certain players in the Texans or just athletes, period, will search their names and try to find different, you know, Twitter stuff or whatever to defend themselves, right? But when your coach goes out there on a limb in front of the media and says, my guys are accountable, my guys are working their butt off, my guys are doing, and saying my guys, and really owning it, right, and standing up for his guys, that speaks volumes to the locker room. It speaks volumes to the type of person he is, type of man he is. It's a true leader. And you heard the leadership coming out of him. You heard the intensity. You heard the love coming out. And as a player, man, you're like, I'll run through a wall for that guy. I'll give everything I got for that guy. So to me, that's the reason that defense played well this past weekend, and hopefully it trickles down to tomorrow.
Weaver, during that presser, also defended Justin Reed.
Yeah.
Justin Reed played a very good game against the Patriots on Sunday. I knew nothing about Anthony Weaver before he was elevated to the Texans defensive coordinator. And then I remember being on the Zoom call for the first time with him. I was so impressed. I was really blown away by this guy. I thought that he was confident and smart. He commanded, you know, the camera, I guess you could say it, since it's a Zoom. To me, and I don't want you to give me your opinion yet, because I want that later on in the segment. To me, right then and there, I thought that guy is a future NFL head coach. And I'm going to ask you that at the end of the segment, but I want to know from you, let's deep dive into Anthony Weaver and what Anthony Weaver has done as a first-year defensive coordinator. The results on the field have not been good. But overall, from a scheme standpoint, how have you seen Anthony Weaver improve as the season has gone along?
Well, I think being a first-time play caller is different than being a position coach, right? So you're going to have your battles. You're going to have to figure things out. And you got to find the right way to put your players in position. And I think he's starting to figure out, that's the biggest thing, he's starting to figure out what guys work well in what situations. On third down, who should I bring in a rush to passer? On my nickel package, who should be in there? Should it be Hargrave? Should it be Roby? Like, what's the best rotation? What's the best skill guys that have on the field? Who can I trust? So it's a matter of learning throughout this process, right? And when you don't have preseason and when you don't have all this stuff in the offseason to really see the guys and more practice time to really see who can and who can't do certain things, it's a project. And he's learning on the fly almost, if that makes sense. So for me, I like the creative blitzes he's come with. I like the way he's setting guys up. Some young guys are playing well. I want to see Ross Blacklock a little more. I want to see John Reed a little more. Find ways to get them on film. Find ways to see what they can really play and really do. But so far, I'm not mad at him at all. This is his first year. I really enjoy him as a defensive coordinator. I think he's going to get better with time. And I think the guys are really buying into what he's trying to preach.
Yesterday, I had a chance to ask Romeo Crennel, just, you know, what have you seen from Anthony Weaver in his first year as a defensive coordinator? This is what he said.
I think Anthony has done well also. I think that he has grown just like Tim has grown. And I think that last week was a good example, you know, because he's been gotten after about the run defense, and probably I've been the guy who's been leading the choir on that. But he stepped up last week and showed that he can get guys to do what they need to do to stop a run. And so that was a great example to me that he's made tremendous progress in his first year as coordinator.
When you hear Romeo say he stepped up and got guys to do what they needed to do, what did that mean to you? What do you think he meant when he said that?
He stepped up and got guys to what?
To do what they're supposed to do.
Well, I think obviously in the Cleveland game and previous games, I'm just going to be honest, JJ kind of did what he wanted to do. And if you look at the previous years, he's the type of guy that in the past he is able to do guess on the play, take the wrong step and be able to recover, or just simply do it, line up wherever he wants to and make a big play because he was the elite JJ Watt, the Hall of Fame guy. Now JJ is not the same guy. No offense to him, he's still very good, but he's not the same guy that can do that. If you watched, if you remember the Browns game, Myles Garrett bit down hard on a fake and Deshaun ran around him, but Myles Garrett forced his butt out of bounds because he ran him down. JJ can't really do that no more, right? So when he's talking about that, he is holding guys accountable. He sat down and talked to JJ, hey, we need you to be gap disciplined on defense. We need you to do your job. We don't want you running around randomly guessing. Let's do your job to play more team defense than individual, right? And I think he just, when you can confront somebody and they listen to you, when you can confront somebody and they listen and they respect you the way they have and they play well and then they do it and it was success because they stopped that very good Patriots running game, because the week before the Patriots and Damian Harris ran for a bunch of yards, right? So they did a good job of containing that, him and Cam Newton. It speaks volumes to what, how I want to put this, it speaks volumes to what respect they have for Anthony Weaver as a whole.
I'm glad you mentioned Watt, because I had a chance yesterday to ask Watt, what are Anthony Weaver's strengths as a coach?
Obviously, he's played for a long time in the league, so he understands the players very well. He knows how to communicate with players. He knows how to handle players. He has great demeanor around the guys, and he really has a good personality to handle the guys because he knows what you're going through. He knows exactly what it's like to be in that locker room, to be going through the feelings you're feeling, and he has a great communication skills set to handle the guys.
You kind of nodded your head throughout that quote. I want to know what exactly you were agreeing with there.
He said he knows how to communicate with players. When you're a coach, and that's a battle. That's a thing I don't know if O'Brien was very good at. That's a thing I don't know if certain other coaches I played with were very good at. How to communicate with players is huge. If you can communicate with a guy and get on him in a way that he respects you and goes out there and improves what he needs to get on, that's a huge aspect. Weaver used to play, so he knows what Watt. He knows what all these guys are going through. He understands that we're not winning right now. We want to win. He knows the stuff. So for him to make adjustments, get on these guys, hold them accountable in a way that they respect it and can turn around and play well and play better, that's what you want from a defensive coordinator. That's what you want from a head coach.
So on that, everyone, you know, when you think about what makes a great head coach, it's always you got to be a great schemer. It's all about X's and O's. To me, it's not necessarily – that stuff helps. But like you said, the communication – the being able to command the room, I think that stuff tends to matter more than the X's and O's stuff as a head coach, as a leader, as the number one guy.
I look at Mike Tomlin and the years he has been over there and with the Steelers and some of the turmoil they dealt with last year with not having – they had a guy named Duck at quarterback last year. who the heck is the No offense to Doug Hodges, he probably had an awesome college career. But when you go from when you go from Big Ben to Duck, and then they had even another guy in there, and they were still able to figure out and win 8 games last year, and then when they get their quarterback back, they don't miss a beat, and they're messing around. They're 10-0 right now. A true leader through the adverse times, through the great times, through the tough times, whatever. That a guy can lead men. Like you mentioned, it's not all about X's and O's. Do the guys believe in what you're preaching? Do the guys respect you enough to take the criticism and go out there and do their job correctly? So I think it's a lot more to it than X's and O's. Plus, as a head coach, you can't always have X's and O's. That's what the OC is for. That's what the DC is for. That's what the position coaches are for. Your job is to lead the team and make sure everything is run correctly.
I want to get to the original question that we had at the beginning of the segment. But first, I want to ask you this. The head coaches that take over one side of the ball, is that the wrong way to do it? Like, do you need to have more trust in your coordinators?
I wouldn't say it's the wrong way, but we'll put it this way. I want to be a head high school coach one day, right? I think the best way to get the most out of your team, your coaches, your players, is to empower the people around you. So if you're the OC, Adam, and I'm over your head looking over your shoulder, then just give me the plays. I'm calling the plays now. Am I empowering you or I'm putting you down? I'm making you feel like you're not worthy. You're not good enough. You're always looking over your shoulder now. You kind of have stuff stay behind my back where I just empower you, let you own it. I'll hold you accountable when we need to. So I think the best way is to let your coaches coach and then you lead the team, right? You had to put your input in here. You ultimately, everything goes through you. But I think it's best if a coach let his OC do what he do, let his DC do what he does, let your position coaches coach. Let your special teams coach do what he does. And, of course, they have to go through you, right? You make all the final decisions. But to empower others around you, I feel it makes a stronger bond through the team.
So if you say that Tim Kelly is going to call plays and then after 3 weeks you say, maybe he's not going to call plays anymore. Well, that might not be the best way to handle it.
Probably not. And if you did the same thing in other years, probably not, right? I think the biggest thing is the trust. If a guy trusts you, if a guy respects you, he'll work hard for you. He will do anything and everything for you. But if he don't, it's going to be doubts and he's going to look at you a different way.
So the premise of this whole segment, is Anthony Weaver a future NFL head coach?
I think right now he's showing characteristics of a future head coach. The way he presents himself, the way he speaks, the way he goes about his business, the way he's holding his guys accountable, the way he's standing up for his guys, the way he communicates. We just heard from JJ how well he communicates with the guys because he has his – he mentioned his player experience, but you don't have to have experience playing to communicate well, right? I think Romeo does have experience playing in the NFL, but he communicates very well to his guys, and guys take a liking to him. So I think if you can have those qualities, he has those qualities, and I think with time he'll get better as a DC. And yes, I think he will be a head coach eventually. I think that'd be pretty cool.
So last thing, so the Texans are obviously going to be searching for a head coach. If you are Cal McNair or whoever is running that search, are you giving Anthony Weaver an interview?
I don't think he's ready yet, so I would say no. I don't think he's ready. I think he's a guy you may want to keep around. I do think he's a guy that, again, people respect. I think Kyle respects him. I think Kyle wants good people around him, right? I think Kyle wants guys that's going to be good for that locker room. It's going to be good for the players on and off the field. And if you look at everything Kyle and the McNairs represent, That's what Weaver is. You know what I mean? So I do think he may be a guy that will stick around and be involved with this team one way or another.
All right, there you go. That's Clint Sterner's. Mm-hmm. That's Clint Sterner's Football at 4. When we come back, the Rockets just introduced Christian Wood to the media. Brandon Scott from SportsRadio610.com will give us his takeaways from what he heard from the newest Rocket Center. That's next on Sports Radio 610.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the Show.
No Clint and Ron today. We do have Adam Spillane, Cecil Shorts, and now joined by Brandon Scott from SportsRadio610.com. The Rockets just introduced Christian Wood, who they acquired in a sign-and-trade from the Detroit Pistons. They get him for 3 years, $41 million. He was really their target this offseason. That was the guy I think that they pointed to as the guy that they really wanted. They had to make a couple of moves in order to make that happen, but he did. They announced the signing a couple of days ago. They introduced him today. Brandon, what stood out from what you heard from Christian Wood today?
Well, I think the major thing with Christian Wood is that he's the big man that I think a lot of fans wanted the Rockets to go get. I mean, that was the glaring thing. You know, how long are they going to do the small ball thing? Are they going to get a big man who can score and defend and, you know, so they don't have to play small ball all the time? And we heard Stephen Silas talk about that when he was introduced a few weeks ago, how they were going to try to play a bunch of different ways. So he got to talk a little bit about that. And one thing that I didn't realize is that he actually coached under or played under Stephen Silas for a little while when he was in Charlotte. And so that stood out as just a thing that I did not realize going in. And then on top of that, I mean, for people who are not familiar with Christian Wood, he just has quite the story, you know, kind of a grinded out story from his background of leaving college early, UNLV early in 2015, and not getting drafted, you know, throwing this huge draft party and not getting drafted. I'm pretty sure it was in Vegas. He's a Vegas guy. Mm. And it was supposed to be an event, and it wasn't. You know, and ever since then, he has had to grind it out through the G League, spent some time in China, got cut in China. And that was actually one of the things that we talked about was, you know, what was that moment where he realized he was going to have to sort of change it up for his career to work out. And it was that moment, you know, being told he wasn't good enough in China. And so, you know, he's had a chance to redeem himself. And you know, this opportunity with the Rockets is really a brand new one because he's never been featured in this kind of way.
What was Silas coming in, him playing under Silas, and I believe you said Charlotte, correct?
Right, correct.
What way is Silas thinking he's going to be able to use him? Because we're so used to the small ball the last, I don't know, half of the season this past year with Westbrook coming in. What will we see for the guys that, or the fans that may not be that familiar with Wood? He's 6'10", he's long, he's lanky, he can play in the post, he can stretch the floor as well. But what can we see from him, and how do you think Silas is going to use him?
Well, the big thing with Christian Wood and the big plus is going to be the pick and roll opportunities, right? I mean, that's what he brings. I mean, he can shoot, he can finish at the rim. So there are multiple different ways that you can use him. I think he's a kind of a multiple type of player. But obviously he's big. They didn't have that. I mentioned that before.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's the potential there for him to be a rim protector on the defensive side and kind of just add that element of the pick and roll with James Harden. Now, will James Harden be there? I know y'all have talked about this already on the show. Is James Harden going to be there for him to be featured with? That remains to be seen. But that's the, I mean, that is the role that he sees himself. And actually, I mean, you can hear from Christian Woods himself, actually, because he spoke to this. Tyler, if you want to play, let's see, is it? Yeah. Play Wood eight, Tyler.
Style of play, you know, I like to run. I like to get out and run. You know, I like to. I know the Houston Rockets like to get out and run. They're a run and gun team. You know, like shooters. You know, with the way James, you know, other guys play around him, I think I could be a great fit.
You know, the thing with Wood, and you compare him to Capella. Wood is a threat from everywhere on the floor.
Right.
And with Clint Capella was a threat at the rim, but three steps away from the rim, you weren't worried about him. So from an offensive standpoint, it makes life easier because you can't just play off of him. You have to identify him every spot on the floor, and he can beat you on every spot of the floor. Now, to me, it's a risky move. It's a risky signing in that you are giving a guy a lot of money who essentially had one good month in the NBA.
Yeah.
And so he doesn't get drafted in 2015. He's bounced around. You know, he was with the Rockets summer league team in 2015, and they really had no interest in keeping him around any longer. He's gone from the Pelicans. He's gone from the Hornets. China, like you said, he was really only able to gain a footing in the NBA the last month of the season after they traded Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin was hurt, so he was getting consistent touches. So for me, it's one thing to do it when no one's watching, when no one cares at the end of the season. It's a whole other thing to do it when the spotlight is on you.
That's a fact.
So I am very interested to see how he handles the spotlight and how he handles the expectations.
Now, with him playing under Silas before, I think that speaks volumes to what type of player and how worker he was, though, right? Because a coach is not going to bring somebody in, especially after he's seen him and he played with him, they were on the same team, if he doesn't trust him, if he doesn't think he can be a good player, doesn't see something in him, right? So I think that's big on his part, that he can come in and contribute and be the player that we've seen the last month or so of the season here with Silas in Houston.
Well, and one of the things with Wood, too, is that people around the league have seen the improvement as well, mm-hmm. right? So I mean, he talked about one game where they played against the Spurs. This wasn't in the press conference, but I was reading up on this about playing one game against the Spurs. And then after the game, Greg Popovich pulls him over and just tells him how much he's improved since the last time he saw him. And he was shocked in that moment because he figured, you know, Greg Pop, I didn't even know that Greg Popovich knew my name, which, you know, I would think the same thing if I was him in that moment. I'm pretty sure he might know him now. But at that time, he's thinking, I wouldn't even imagine he knows my name. So the point I'm making there is that people have not only known his track record, because, look, back to Adam's point, there is a concern there that you pay a guy who's had basically one good month. And not just that, but there's been a narrative, there's been a track record of work ethic issues, of, you know, being on time and things like that, just being a professional. Now, the guy did come out at 19. He was a really young guy coming into the league, and he was not mature. And these maturity issues have kind of followed him. But it seems as though all of the failures have resonated with him, you know, have brought some kind of change in him. You know, I mentioned earlier getting cut in China, that being sort of the moment. As a matter of fact, when I asked him about that, he kind of got choked up because I think that was the sobering moment where he's like, this is the make or break of my career. You know, and that's when he kind of started putting in the different kind of work, the work that he wasn't putting in before, kind of just wanting to be the talented guy, you know. And so I think that's when it changed. But that's a real concern. Like, everybody has that concern, right? Just in sports in general, even folks who don't have the character or maturity issues. Like, once they get paid, do they get complacent? Do they mail it in? And I think that's a legitimate concern to have. But, I mean, he sounded like a guy who's motivated to me.
I would be very interested, and they didn't make Stephen Silas available, and we are likely not going to hear from Stephen Silas until they start up training camp next week. But I want to know from Stephen Silas, what is different about Christian Wood today than when he was in Charlotte 4 years ago? I'm very interested to know how exactly he has changed. The Harden question I know was answered. What did he? What was the response to the Harden stuff?
Yeah, so the Harden stuff was really interesting because earlier in the press conference, when he's talking about what he brings to the table, he says Harden hopefully in the pick and roll, and that was a word that, you know, just kind of fleeting a little bit, right? But he did say hopefully, because we all know what's going on, right?
Yeah.
You know, nobody's living under a rock. And then later on, it was the last question he was asked, if that was a concern, and he said no, it's not a concern. Didn't elaborate. Wasn't asked to elaborate, but you could imagine, you know, $41 million is good whether you get to play with Harden or not. And
you got that right, brother. That's, you know, $41 million is $41 million, no matter how you want to cut it.
And not just that. I mean, obviously the money is the main thing. Let's not get it twisted. But also, he's going to be heavily featured. You know, he's going to be heavily relied on. What the money means for his role and what it means for his career, you know, as a professional, that factors in to it as well, whether Harden is here or not. You know, he views himself as more of a number two if Harden is here, I'm sorry. But if he's not here, who knows what the team looks like.
When you watch him on film, the one thing that stands about him, he's got to get stronger.
Yep.
And I was actually surprised just looking at his finishing at the rim. He's much better in the paint than you would expect when you consider that he's got to get a lot stronger. He's not an explosive leaper. He's not a great athlete. He's obviously got the length. Did anyone ask him what he feels like he needs to improve on the most?
You know what? That actually didn't come up, what he needs to improve on the most, and it should have. But obviously those things that you mentioned are, you know, they're serious because we're talking about a team that got beat up, you know, by bigger teams, you know. So he's expected to come in and be that guy, the bigger guy on the team in the more featured role. So that's obviously going to have to be something that, you know. But he did say he believes himself to be a rim protector and someone who can also defend on switches. I don't know if they're going to switch as much or if they're going to switch all the time, because I know Silas talked about maybe not switching all the time when we talked to him a few weeks ago. But in the event that they do, he views himself as a capable defender on the switches. And obviously, I guess just the length, being able to protect the rim.
Let me ask you guys this. With the addition with Wood and Boogie Cousins, and say everything stays intact, say you got Westbrook, say you got Harden, is this enough to get over the hump? Is this enough to maneuver your way to the NBA Finals?
No.
Yeah, no. I can't see it. You know, there are just too many other teams that are good, you know, that I would put ahead of the Rockets. You know, at least three, you know. What do you think, Adam?
The Lakers just drubbed them in a short series, what turned out to be a short series, and the Lakers are better today than they were back in August, September, whenever that series was actually played. So I would say no to that. But one thing that they have really focused on this offseason is getting younger. And basically everyone that they played, Robert Covington was the baby of that group, and he's 29. Mm. So you look at what they've done, Wood is 25. That's a guy who I think they believe is a centerpiece moving forward. He's a centerpiece who is 25 years old. That's nice to have when you consider that P.J. Tucker is 35. Russell Westbrook is 32. Eric Gordon is 31, about to be 32. James Harden just turned 31. So to have some injection of youth, and then you go down the roster a little bit, Sterling Brown is 24, 25 years old. I mean, they've added some youth. I really like the Mason Jones kid out of Arkansas. I don't know exactly what they have planned for him. I believe he'll be signed to a two-way if he hasn't already. But that's somebody who I think has got some ability. I don't know athletically if he's going to be able to hang in the NBA, but I do like him. But to infuse some youth into an older roster, I think is important.
So, and to speak to your point, Adam, and to answer your question as well, Cecil, I think at the very least what the moves that they've made in the last few weeks have done, I think it should kill the concern, at least from James and Russ. Like, the root of all of these trade rumors, right, is that James Harden and Russell Westbrook are not confident in the direction of the team where they want to. So I think that what they've done should be at least good enough for them to be optimistic to want to give it a shot. I don't think it puts them over the hump, but I do think it quells some of those concerns that the organization's not headed in the right direction. The loss of Daryl Morey, the loss of Mike D'Antoni means that their window's closed or anything like that. They still got James Harden, most importantly, and then this cast of guys that they're bringing around them, to Adam's point, getting younger and with talent. I think that that's something that they should give a shot.
Well, what gives you confidence in that? I want to hear you too, Adam, because if you say it's not going to be enough to win the West, right? It's not going to be enough for that. Why should they stick around?
That's me.
They're both in their 30s, right?
Right.
So why would they want to stick around?
That's me thinking, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that at the very least that they have shown an effort, like with Christian Wood in particular, I think that that shows an effort. Hey, we're trying to surround you with young talent. We are trying to make a move, you know. And, you know, there's all these questions because of, you know, luxury tax, lack of draft picks, and all of these constraints, you know, economic concerns with COVID, whatever excuses that you want to bring about. And the Rockets are still making moves. They're still trying, you know. I mean, you can say what you want, and they have not achieved the ultimate goal. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I think that I'm pretty sure you would agree with this, Adam, that every year that they have pretty much tried it pretty much as hard as you could, you know, for the most part, save for the luxury tax part. You know, they have tried to put together a contender.
And the luxury tax is a big part. For me, Rafael Stone, the new GM, is an unknown. He is an unknown in the NBA. I mean, I think that, you know, I've talked to one executive and I asked him the question, what do you know about Rafael Stone? And he said nothing. Like, we don't know anything about this guy. And I think that it was a surprise around the league that they hired him immediately to replace Daryl Morey. I know it was a surprise to a lot of people around that team. And I do know that there were some people who weren't overly thrilled that they wound up hiring him. So I think that he has had a good offseason. I think that he has shown that he's creative and that he's forward thinking, that he's made some positive moves. So I think if you're Rafael Stone, you sit down with James Harden and you say, you know what? We're not perfect right now, but we have an eye towards the future. And we have some ideas on how not only can we get back, you know, basically what they did this offseason is the most that they can do. They're hard cap. They really can't do anything else. But I think you say, hey, you know, we had a vision this offseason. We accomplished that vision. Here's what we are thinking moving forward after this season. So I think that you're selling him on what they did this offseason and then what you can do in the off seasons to come.
Yeah. No, yeah. And that's basically what I'm saying, man. I think that given given all of the uncertainty and the moves that they've made, I think that those are enough. And think about it. When did you just say that training camp starts?
Like, next week.
Next week. Next week, man. I mean, that was always the oddest part about this to me, was that knowing that they were going to have an abbreviated offseason and it was going to take a while, or that they would not have a long time to get acclimated to the next spot that they go to, it never really made a lot of sense to me to try to get out of here to begin with. So, you know, I think that they have done some things that show you that this team can be maybe not over the hump. They're probably running in place. But, hey, if you're James Harden, I mean, to me, if I'm James Harden, I'm thinking that I'm the guy that's going to get us over the hump.
True.
That I just need to do that next thing the next year to give us over the hump. So hopefully he views it that way.
Brandon, thanks for coming on with us. Have a very happy Thanksgiving. When we come back, I want to revisit with Cecil the Texans' 2019 draft class. They had 4 of the first 86 picks in that draft. Where do things stand with it now? I want Cecil to grade the class as it stands today. That's next on Sports Radio 610.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the show.
Adam Spillane and Cecil Shorts in for Clint and the show with you until 6 o'clock. So the Texans' 2019 draft class is going to be important in kind of the future of the team because you had 4 picks out of the first 86 selections in that draft. And when you look at what the Texans have now, they don't have any draft picks. They did not pick in the first round this year. They do not pick in the first or second round in this next draft. So I wanted to take a look back. As you know, this class is almost through 2 seasons. I want to take a look back at how this draft class has fared so far. And so let's just start at the top, and let's start with Tytus Howard, who I think a lot of people thought was a reach when they picked him at 23, and there was the talk that they wanted Andre Dillard, but they couldn't trade up to get Andre Dillard, and then the Eagles came in and they took him before he could get to the Texans. But to me, Tytus Howard has really turned into a nice player.
Yeah, he is definitely probably the best player from this draft class. He is somebody that is coming into his own. Oh, he was very athletic, but he's learning the position at right tackle. I think early in his rookie year, he was bouncing around a little bit from tackle to guard, whatever the case may be on both sides. But he is somebody that's coming into his own. And I think, to be honest, when the addition of Laremy Tunsil, when he came in and being able to learn from Laremy and from an older veteran like that who played tackle, even though it's the opposite side, you can learn a whole bunch from one of the best tackles in the league, right? So I think he's lived up to what a first-round 23rd pick is supposed to do. And then you're right. The comparison is really Andre Dillard to him. Who's having the better career between those two? And I think so far it's Tytus Howard.
Well, and Dillard's hurt right now anyway.
Very
so,
true.
And you wonder how much he missed the last half of last season with the knee injury.
Yeah.
How much does that stunt your growth as a player when you have to miss, 2 months,
especially as a young player, because you're trying to figure it out. Like you're trying to learn, you're trying to see if you can catch up to the speed of the game and understand the calls being made and the communication between you and the guard and you and the center and the quarterback and you and just being able to see things. So when you miss a lot of time early on, it can definitely stunt your growth. So the more reps he's getting, and I think he's continuing to improve even now.
Yeah, I don't know what you thought, but the way that they handled him in that first training camp was very odd.
It was dumb.
Where, you draft this guy as a tackle, but you're playing him at guard, and they had Matt Khalil at tackle, and then he wasn't playing, and then it was just such an odd, just how they handled him was odd. I don't think that it helped him. And then they make the Tunsil trade, and then there was just kind of the natural, well, now he's going to play right tackle, and you wonder if they don't get Tunsil, how does that change his trajectory, and what would that have done to him if he's still over there playing guard?
Man, listen, when you draft a guy and he's supposed to be tackled, then you bring him in and you're doing all this different stuff. They were trying to figure out what's the best 5 guys we can put together, right? And they knew that Howard was athletic enough to be able to play guard, be able to play both sides of the line. But for a rookie, that's extremely tough. Like, that's extremely tough to be able to go from tackle to guard and then go to left guard and then left tackle. Like, that's 2 totally opposites of what you have to do, like, technique-wise. And it's extremely tough on especially a rookie. So I think that's pushed him back a lot. And if it wasn't for Tunsil kind of saved him. Because
it saved
the whole offensive line. You know what I mean? Because we had no idea. We were thinking Matt Khalil was going to be the starting left tackle for a long period of time. Thank goodness that didn't happen. He didn't sound confident himself at all. But to have... if it wasn't for Tunsil, he would have been bounced around, and I'm not sure if he would have been ever figured out how to be comfortable at one position, and I don't know if we would see how he would grow, if that makes sense.
All right, so the Texans picked 54th and 55th. I'm going to skip to 55th, and that was Max Sharping, who they called him a tackle when he was drafted, but he has played guard, and the results for him have been a little uneven.
Yeah, his rookie year, I thought he played well. I think he struggled at times, but I thought overall he played well. And I'm like, the more reps he get, he'll be fine. Because he was playing left guard next to Tunsil. So I'm like, they're going to figure this out. They have it. Come this year, it was a complete opposite. He struggled. Not sure what was the difference. I was expecting him to take a turn forward. It's like he turned back some. And I'm not sure what was the difference for him. And that's one for me. I love Dev, but it comes down to Matt Devlin. Like, why is this guy in particular going downward instead of upward? Why is he inconsistent? Why is some pass sets look great and other pass sets he looks confused? Why on the run game he's not getting low enough? It's just certain things. It's like, what are we doing or not doing to get the best out of him? So I think the jury's still out on him. I don't think he's a guy like, oh, we got to get rid of him. No, I think he still has potential to be very good. It's just, how do we get it out of him and get him more consistent?
Yeah, potential. So you keep him on the left side with Tunsil. How good can that left side be? Because we all know Tunsil is as good as it gets at that position. So when you pair him with Sharping, just how good can that duo be?
Man, you can have one of the best left sides in the game. And that's the most important side because of Deshaun. Mm-hmm. That's his backside, right? So that's the side you want to be secure on. That's the side you want to have down pat. You don't got to worry about. So that's something they got to get him rolling. And I think, to be honest, the more reps that he gets, I keep saying it, the better he'll get. Why not throw him back in there now? Why not let him get the reps? Let him make him a few mistakes, but let him play. Let him build that confidence up. Because when you keep taking a guy in and out, in and out, in and out, you're not giving him no type of stability or confidence in his game.
All right, let's go to the next, or let's go to the guy who they picked right before him, and that was Lonnie Johnson. And Lonnie Johnson was taken as a cornerback out of Kentucky, a big corner.
Yeah.
And corner really did not, you know, I don't know if they feel like he can't play corner, but you started to see him play some safety as the season went along last year.
Yeah.
And now you're starting to see him play more safety this year. What have you seen from him so far?
I think he might be more of a safety. You know, I think he, because his physical nature, I think he fits the safety. He'll come up and he'll hit you. He has very good speed that he can come downhill. He can cover space. I'm just not sure at the corner position. He's very handsy. He is very handsy. And when you have bigger guys that are handsy, you will get a lot of pass interferences. You will get beat a lot because they depend on their hands and their length more than their athletic ability, more than their technique. So moving him to safety, that might be his position, but you got to figure out what's best for him. We're still trying to figure it out. The Texans are. They don't know how to use him. They know they want to use him. They just know what is the best way to use him. You know, he got abused last year in the playoff, but against Kelce, but everybody does. That's Travis Kelce. He's probably the best in the game, especially today. So they got to figure out how to be able to use him. I think safety may be it. Maybe it's Justin Reed and him back deep at safety. Maybe rolling one guy down and making him the other guy play deep. And he's capable of covering any corner in the safety position. Any receiver in that safety position, any tight end in that safety position. But out wide, I think he is kind of a liability just because he's so handsy and he depends on his athletic ability more than his technique. And then, to be honest, he doesn't have a veteran presence but like Jonathan Joseph did last year in the room right now to help him with his technique, somebody he will really listen to. So safety may be the better fit for the guy.
Can he play in the box consistently?
Yes, yes. He can be like a Buda Baker for the Cardinals, or he can be like that extra linebacker, quote-unquote, that he can be in the box. He'll come up and he'll pound you. He'll come up and be aggressive. He'll come up and hit you and put hands on you. So he can definitely be that guy for sure.
You say that they haven't figured out kind of a role for him. Is that a failure on the organization that we're almost 2 years in and they still don't have a firm grasp of what he's good at?
I wouldn't say it's a failure because you did change defensive coordinators, even though everybody stayed in the house. You did change defensive coordinators and you're still trying to fill them out. They see the potential. And sometimes for certain people, it takes longer, right? So I wouldn't call it a failure yet. If it's year three, next year it comes and they still can't figure it out, then I'll say it's a failure. Because you got to figure out how, and that's one thing about a coordinator or a head coach, you got to put your players in the best position for them to succeed. So what does he do well? Figure out what he does well. Is he better just strictly in the box, playing downhill, everything in front of him? Is he better outside at corner or in the slot over? Just figure out whatever he's good at and let him do that and that be his role and then grow from there. Once he dominates that role, then you give him more and more and more. But you got to figure out a consistent role for him.
Is it disappointing that you draft him as a corner and it doesn't seem like he can stick there?
No, because you draft guys all the time that will switch positions, especially on the defensive side of the ball at DB. It just depends on what scheme they're in. So it's not disappointing The more disappointing part is we haven't found a way to consistently keep him on the field. I want him to be a every down starter because I think he can be. But we got to figure out, and I say we, I mean the Texans. The Texans got to figure out a way to get that going for him.
All right, so that was the second round. Let's go to the third round in Kahale Waring. He has yet to appear in a game. He has not been active for a game yet. He is off IR now. Is this pick, you know, I remember Benny Joppru back the first year of when they drafted him in the third round out of Michigan and he never played in a game. He kept getting hurt. Is this a Benny Joppru situation or can this pick be salvaged?
Well, this is interesting, right? Because we've heard so many good things about how, oh man, he looks awesome in shorts and he's so athletic and he's so fast. And at San Diego State, he was this and that. And the water polo conversation we were having on here, I'm like, why are we talking about this guy in water polo? So we were this is how athletic he was, but I don't, does he have a catch yet? Has he started at tight end? Has he played any tight end in the game? So it's like you spend a third round pick on him and he hasn't done anything to a third round level. When you draft a guy in the top three rounds, you expect that guy to be able to be a contributor in their first few years, and he hasn't done that. And then now if you look at the tight end room, you got Fales who's playing at a high level. You got Akins who came in last week and made some really big plays, and he's playing at a high level. Now you got Farrell Brown who's coming in. He's blocking extremely well, can make plays in the passing game. He's being used in different formations like you showed me before. So it's interesting to see where he'll fit. I'm not sure if he'll fit with this organization anymore. And that's messed up because you spent a third round pick on him. Like when you draft a guy in the third round, you're saying he's going to contribute. He's going to be here for at least through his contract. You know what I mean? And that's the frustrating part. This I may consider a failure.
And also the people who drafted him are gone.
The people that drafted him are gone. So that makes it even a shorter leash for him, especially for the new GM coming in next year, the new head coach next year. If you have no film, we didn't draft you, we didn't want you, we didn't bring you in, and you're not contributing in any way, what use are you for us?
Do the Texans have to figure out a way to get him on the field for one of these last six games just to get some film on him, just to see what he can actually do in a game situation? Because if you go 2 years without playing, you're basically punting on that pick.
Yeah, you got to figure out a way, especially once you find out you're not playoff eligible. I think you have to figure out a way to get film on this kid to know what you got, to know what your future looks like, right? You got to be able to be like, okay, he can play or he cannot play. So next year you don't have to figure out what's going on. You have a decision to make, right? Because you're not going to keep – right now they got four tight ends – on active roster. That's not normal. You don't keep four tight ends on active roster, right? It's usually three or under. So they need to play him. When, how, and what way, I'm not sure, but you have to see what you got with Kahale.
All right, fifth rounder, Charles Omenihu, taking it at 161. He's shown some flashes, and he can do some things in the as a pass rusher.
He's shown some flashes. I'm not giving up on him yet. I think he's decent. I think he can grow still. I think we can have him. I think he can be the DN, nose tackle type of guy. I think he can play a little backer a little bit. I think he's that athletic. But I think he is a guy that it is what it is. You know what I mean? I don't think it's going to be anything special. Nothing like he's going to have a boom. He's just a solid player that can figure out his role and make plays and get some pressure when needed. I don't think he's a centerpiece. I think he'll be a role player. Is he there yet? He's showing flashes here and there, but I think no offense to him, I think we're seeing the best of him. I don't know how much good better he can be.
So when you say we've seen the best of him, when you look at where they picked him, is that a good pick?
Yes. I think fifth round and you're getting some type of production. He's playing. He's getting some pressure. He shows flashes. That's what you want. Special teams guy, that's the guy you want in the fifth round. If he gives anything more than that, great. Absolutely. We got a steal. But if fifth round, sixth round, you're looking for role players. You're looking for guys that can play special teams, guys that can come in and give guys subs, guys that can come in and pressure the passer on different situations. And I think he's doing that for us now.
All right, sixth round, Xavier Crawford is no longer on the team, so we can pretty much say that pick did not quite work out. He's with the Bears now. I think he's on their practice squad. But let's go to the seventh round, Cullen Gillespie.
This is my guy because he listens in. I actually met him at the rodeo the last time we had a rodeo, right? And I met him, and he was like, hey, what's up, man? Great to meet you in person. He has all the energy in the world. I know Tyler's all happy because he is a Aggie.
Oh, yeah. He is loved in Aggieland, man.
He is an Aggie, but he's a fun-loving guy. He knows his role. seventh round, he is the perfect seventh round pick. He's on all special teams. He's going to run down them kickoff. He's your fullback when you need him. He knows his role. He knows his value to the team. He works extremely hard, and he's shown up in different situations. So I think he's doing a fabulous job with his role, and he's a guy that I would like to be able to keep around forever. But he's a cool guy.
When you have a seventh round pick, and real quick, when you have a seventh round pick who remains on the roster after almost 2 years, that's a huge hit in the draft, isn't
it?
Oh,
yeah. Oh, for sure. When normally, I mean, seventh round, it's basically, you know, you're kind of on the you could get cut train. You know what I mean? We don't know about you. We like you enough to draft you, but not we don't love you. So we'll see how it works out. We see some type of potential, some type of use for you. Let's see what happens. And he's filling the role. When you last 2 or 3 years, like you mentioned, on a seventh round pick, and he'll probably be here another 3 or 4, or another 2 or 3, I should say, because of his he does a really good job running down on kickoff and special teams and everything else. So he's a good little seventh round pick.
All right, real quick, grade the draft, grade the class, A, B, C, D, F.
Oh man, I like Cullen. Xavier's gone. I have to give it a C. I have to give it a C.
Ooh,
I have to give it a C.
I thought it'd be a little higher than that, but there you go.
I have to give
the 2019 draft class a C in the eyes of Cecil Shorts. We are 3 hours down. We've got one more to go. When we come back, we will take a look at the news of the day with the 5 o'clock fire. We'll hear from newest Rocket Christian Wood. That's coming up next on Sports Radio 610.
It's going to start a fire!
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.